Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home, plus the KTTH smartphone app. They came, they saw, they protested, they whined. So how did the Amazon walkout go? That is what's trending.
What's trending in Amazonia?
Well, it doesn't appear to be all that successful, this walkout from Amazon in South Lake Union, downtown Seattle, where the walkout was all about protesting the company's impact on climate change. But really, they were mad that they had to return to work 3 days a week. God forbid they actually have to go into the office like the adults that they are. But of course, we have enabled this kind of entitlement. These are people who feel like they are owed a job location and salary that they approve of beyond simply getting into a contractual relationship with an employer where both sides come to the table, explain what's being offered, you negotiate a little bit, they either say yes or no, and then ultimately you have all the power to say, yes, I accept this job, or no, I do not. And then, of course, COVID hit. And Democrats took advantage of the COVID pandemic by instituting stay-at-home mandates for companies to survive. They had to allow for remote working. And then, of course, you had people saying, hey, I kind of dig this. I really dig this. I don't like having to go into the office. I don't like having to brush my teeth and put on pants. I like working from home. And so they decided to put up a fight when Amazon announced that you had to go into the office. By the way, not even full time. Not even full time. They're talking about doing it 3 days a week. And so there was this call for this walkout today that was supposed to bring out up to 1,000 people, except it was more like a couple, maybe 300. Not a lot of people showed up for this. And let's say, just for the sake of argument, that they were able to get the 1,000 people. All 1,000 people that they wanted showed up and protested and walked out. That would have accounted for about 1% of their workforce. So it's not all that meaningful. And yet, they're trying to amplify their message so that the media considers this to be a serious issue. It is not a serious issue. This is a story about a bunch of entitled brats who don't want to go back into the office. Now, our friends from Cairo News Radio were down at South Lake Union at the headquarters for Amazon to talk to some of the workers, to talk to some of the protesters. Aaron is a worker there.
The general manager is taking a lot of strict measures. And of course, like, I'm sure everyone's unhappy about it. I stand in the elevators and like I could see people writing notes on the walls. Like, yeah, I can tell what the general attitude is.
Whatever that means. I mean, I think he's basically saying is, and by the way, I don't even think this guy was a protester. I think he was just a worker who happened to be there during his lunch break. So maybe we shouldn't count even him in the 200 to 300. But he's out there and he hears people complaining. For him, he's like, yeah, I don't care. I have to go back into the office.
I'm okay with it. I feel like I got lucky because I live really close to the office. So it's not really a big deal to me. But I imagine if I live far away, maybe I would be a little bit more discontent.
Yeah, maybe. Then don't live far away from where you work. There is a basic societal expectation. You may not like it, but there is an expectation you go into the office. I know you're pretending that you're more efficient at home. You're not. You know how I know? Because you don't do laundry when you're in the office, but you do it when you're at home. You're not taking a break to plan your own meal and then cook it and watch it cook and then enjoy it in front of television, in front of Netflix. When you're at the office, you do that though. When you're at home, you're not taking your dog out for a walk 14 times a day. You're not picking up your dry cleaning in the middle of the day. Not when you're at the office, but you do it when you're at home. And while you're doing that, there's someone else who actually is responsible and working during the day, during normal business hours, trying to get you to respond on Microsoft Teams to a question they had, and they're not able to get it because you're going to pick up your laundry. You're doing your grocery shopping when it's nice and desolate at the local grocery store. But of course, this is all about, and I mean all about, climate change, right? That's one of those issues that they're using to pretend that this is a serious movement when all it is they're doing is complaining. Bunch of complainers.
We're here because a lot of Amazonians feel in their gut that something is not right with the company.
Oh, then quit. You can quit right now. Something's not right? Awesome. I'm glad you were able to identify the quote-unquote something, the feeling that something's not right. Great, leave. work somewhere else. This kind of behavior is absolutely toxic. It creates a toxic culture. It creates even more inefficiencies. Because instead of doing work, you've got people who are whispering to each other, saying, oh, don't you hate it? Trying to organize some sort of resistance. They're not doing their work. I would fire every single person who stepped out, as long as they didn't do it during their lunch break, I guess. But I would argue that if you're organizing any of this, you're subverting the company. You're trying to see it fail. And you 100% deserve to be fired. If you don't like this company, do not work there. If you don't like it, don't work there.
We're here because a lot of Amazonians feel in their gut that something is not right.
They feel in their gut. I love that clip. They feel in their gut, and you can tell that she's delivering this with some sort of conviction, right? You believe her when she says this, right? Again, listen to this.
We're here because a lot of Amazonians feel in their gut that something is not right with the company.
Might have been because you had stale cheese this morning, and that grumbling is not feeling in your gut that something's not right with Amazon. It's with what you had for breakfast. So go take a little bit of a 17-minute break in the toilet and go figure this out. These people, I if you can tell I'm dismissive, it's because I am. If you can hear the annoyance in my voice, it's because I'm annoyed. I think we've allowed the dynamic between employer and employee to become so incredibly lopsided. We have this movement years and years and years ago that I think started from a good place, that we want a work-life balance, that we don't need to adhere to a work culture in which you're working 12 hours a day, spending virtually no time at home with your kids or just with yourself. It's not healthy. Okay, fine. If you're not built that way, I get it. I kind of am built that way, but most people are not. Fine. Have your work-life balance. But that work-life balance became an imbalance where you have mostly a younger generation of workers saying, I want more time off. I want to work on my own terms. And I want to get more money. Less responsibilities, but more money. That's not how any business can be run. And they've got on their side Democrats, mostly. Not all Democrats, but I think the people who support these workers are mostly Democrats. I don't think they're Republicans. You've got them on their side amplifying the message, using unions to help pursue these kinds of goals, all to the dissatisfaction of management, but also to the detriment of a company that cannot survive when you give the employee everything that they ask for, especially with what they're asking for is just incredibly unreasonable. Amazon is struggling right now. That's why they laid off so many people. During the pandemic, they accelerated their growth, and then it slowed down considerably. And things did not stay as the new norm as far as the way people were shopping during COVID because, hey, guess what? Now they can go back into the real world. Amazon thought they would stay online forever. Thankfully, people said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to go back into the real world. We want our lives back. And so Amazon had to now accommodate for that new norm, which meant they had to lay people off. And I imagine some of the people who are laid off will happily come back and take the job of some of these people who are complaining about going into the office 3 days a week. I guarantee you're going to be able to find someone who would say, you know what? I appreciated my job. I don't hold the resentment about being laid off. I would take that job back in a heartbeat. Go let Johnny over there go give them the pink slip and let me take that person's job. Let me take his job. The entitlement complex that so many employees, and it's not just Amazon, but employees just in this newer, younger generation of workers is just, to me, it's lazy. It's not just entitlement, it's the laziness associated with it because the people who are the most entitled also happen to be the laziest. They almost always happen to be the least important person in a workforce. And we all have them in our offices. I'm assuming that people are listening to me right now and they're thinking to themselves, oh, I know exactly the kind of person you're talking about. We have Matt in accounting. We have Sasha, that paralegal. By the way, is Sasha male or female? Depends. Are they American? Are they Russian? Let's just call them they. But you all have some of these people in your workforces, people who are just going to sort of cruise by, not really do a lot of work, but always complain about something, about how they're not getting promoted, how they're always stuck in traffic and they hate it, quit. Because I live near Amazon, or live in that general area of downtown South Lake Union, and it is such a better community because there are more people who are walking around. There's a buzz. There's an energy. It feels like a city again. It feels like we're finally getting back to normal for the city of Seattle. And when you've got a whole bunch of people outside, they're pushing away the homelessness. They're supporting the local businesses. And you get that energy. I like that energy. I want to keep that energy. And the people who are sucking that energy out of the community are the ones who protested today. Every single one of them should be fired. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Tacoma?
More shocking violence out of Pierce County, in this case, the city of Parkland, where for the last 3 weeks, a traveling nurse has been fighting for his life. His name is Bradley Innes. He's been at a hospital in Tacoma for the last 3 weeks after witnesses say, according to Cairo 7 TV, that he was at a friend's home in Parkland in an apartment complex. And at some point, a man bursts into the apartment and accuses someone of parking in his parking spot. And at the time, obviously, you're kind of shocked in the moment that someone would react that way, even if it was true. Lewis is a friend of Bradley. He was with him at the time. And he says this all happened really, really quick. He spoke with Cairo 7 TV.
From the time I heard somebody's in my parking spot to the shot fired, maybe 12 seconds.
That's absolutely insane. Now, for the record, Bradley Innes was not parked in the wrong parking spot. And yet still, he ends up getting shot by this man who then flees. Now, Davis, Lewis Davis, created a GoFundMe for the Innes family because they're dealing with a lot of not just the bills from the hospital, but the family apparently lives in Barbados and they wanted to be with him for his recovery. And that's expensive. Right now they've raised, at least as of this morning, a little over $18,000. So that's great news for the family. The mother, her name is Anne. And, you know, when this happens to your kid, you're obviously reeling. And she points out this is going to change his life forever.
My son will never be the same. Physically, emotionally, mentally, he will not be the same.
Now, what's just terrifying in this, the man who suspected of the shooting is out on bail facing an assault charge. Now, part of that might have to do with the fact that they're still building the case, but this is another example of the culture of lawlessness. Now, look, bad things happen, right? And this is obviously completely out of the norm. This specific kind of incident doesn't happen all that often. But I would argue that you're more likely to see instances like this when you live in a state that says over and over and over again, they don't take crime seriously. And it's allowing people to feel like they can get away with this kind of act. And again, I'm not going to pretend this specifically can be pointed to one specific law, but I do think it's more likely than not to happen something like this when you embrace this culture of lawlessness. Because we certainly know there are other people who have gone out of their way to take advantage of our lax laws and our permissiveness when it comes to breaking the law, especially when you're younger, where we say, yeah, we're not going to throw you in jail. We're going to put you in some restorative justice program. No, we're not going to allow the cops to do their jobs. Instead, we'll go ahead and send out social workers. When you live in that area, when you live in a state like that, that feeling permeates that you're not going to suffer any consequences when you break the law. And as we've said in the past, you start out slowly, right? You don't just start shooting people. Maybe you steal something, you shoplift. And these are people who are already bad to begin with. I'm not saying it converts otherwise law-abiding people. But you've got bad elements out there, vulnerable elements to bad influences out there, and they start small, they shoplift. Maybe they get caught, and nope, they don't see any jail time. They don't even see any charges. Then it's an armed robbery. Then it's an assault. And then it's carrying a gun with you. And that's how you solve your problems. We've seen this over and over and over again. And we can pretend that this is normal. We can pretend that Parkland and Tacoma and Pierce County in general, they've always had a crime problem. Not to the extent that we've seen it lately. Bradley is still in the hospital. He's very weak, but he did manage to speak. We had to pump up the voice a little bit here, the audio levels here, because of how weak he is as he's speaking, but he's keeping a positive attitude.
I want to thank doctors, nurses, my mom, Louis.
So he said, I want to thank my doctors, nurses, my mom, his friend Louis. Good for him for, you know, keeping the spirits as high as humanly possible. I can't imagine it's easy when you are still not just struggling from the effect of a gunshot wound, but dealing with the fact that you're still in a hospital 3 weeks later fighting for your life. And I think it's really easy. I imagine it's really easy to get into a really dark place and be angry. I say that as someone who's angry in a dark place all the time, and I haven't been shot. So I imagine it is much more difficult to stay kind of positive when you're in a position that this poor guy is in. So we wish Bradley the best of luck. And I just hope, yet again, that this is a wake-up call for folks to take this crisis seriously. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
On Fox Business this morning, Senator Roger Marshall, friend of the show, Republican from Kansas, he was discussing the fentanyl crisis. And he was talking about it in terms where he leaned into some hyperbole to make a point. I think most people are reasonable in their reaction to a comment I'm about to play. But we're told that this was delivered in the most serious way possible and that Roger Marshall sincerely believes that it is easier to get fentanyl than it is to get pizza.
And by the way, fentanyl is easier to get than ordering pizza. You can have fentanyl delivered to your school. The cartel has now drug sellers, pushers in those schools as well. Easier to get than pizza and much more accessible as well. That's the challenge before us. It's so easy to get. We're doing what we can to push back, but eventually it comes down with Joe Biden control the border.
Now, again, I think anyone who's acting honestly and wants to have a good faith conversation, you listen to that statement and you know exactly what it is he's saying. And by the way, he's almost certainly more accurate than not. I'm not going to pretend that it's not easy to get a slice of pizza, right, or to get a pizza delivered to you. But he's talking about it in the context of kids. And technically, I would argue he's right. It's harder for a younger person to be able to order a pizza, afford the pizza, and have it delivered unless his parents give him permission to do it or her to do it. And it's very, very easy and affordable to get a hold of fentanyl. You do have drug dealers who are preying on kids. They're going to schools all across the country. And they're selling fentanyl. They're selling it usually in the form of like OxyContin, where the fentanyl is being laced into the drug. And the pill itself costs between $1 and $3. I think it depends on where it is you live. In the Pacific Northwest, it's somewhere between $1 and $3. Portland, you can get it for about $2. I think in Seattle, you can probably get it for about two-ish dollars as well. I don't know whether or not Biden inflation has caused any problems here. But it's very easy to get a hold of fentanyl. That's his point. And we can pretend all we want. And in Mediaite, which called this comment out and tried to get people riled up that this is an absurd position for him to take or statement for him to make. You can pretend that it's not easy to get fentanyl, whether you're a kid or an adult, all you want. But by taking that position, what exactly do you hope to accomplish? All you're doing is hiding a reality that's going to end up getting even more people killed. We're seeing record high numbers of fatal overdoses, and it's being driven in large part by fentanyl. You've got fentanyl and meth. Fentanyl is by far causing the most harm in our communities. And again, part of the reason is because it's so incredibly cheap. It's very, very toxic, particularly when it's laced and you don't know it's there. You're going to take some more than you otherwise might if you're an addict who knows what it is they're doing when it comes to dosing fentanyl. And ultimately, they end up dying. So tell me again why the anger is more towards, or the criticism, more towards Roger Marshall, the senator from Kansas, making a salient point than it is about the ease of getting fentanyl. Again, whether you're a kid or an adult. And by the way, an adult who's homeless in downtown Seattle right now can't afford to buy a pizza here. He can't afford to get a pill that's laced with fentanyl or is pure fentanyl. Fenty or the powder. The blues. It's much easier and much more affordable for that person to get a hold of those pills than it is to buy a pizza that's like $30 for a medium over at Rocco's or wherever it is you get your pizza, Zeke's. So Roger Marshall is 100% correct. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Grant Show. If you missed me yesterday on Kennedy or this morning on the Faulkner Focus, or if you're not able to watch me tonight on Fox News at night at 9 o'clock, make sure you check out our social media channels. Just text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. God bless Dr. Karen Johnson. I have a little bit of a soft spot for the now former State Office of Equity Director. Her pronouns are she, hers, and beloved. I'm not making that up. It's in her email signature that she says you should, if you're going to refer to her, call her beloved Dr. Karen A. Johnson. She has led this newly created office for about 17 months. And part of the reason why I have a little bit of a soft spot for her is she's unusually responsive, let's say, to emails that I have sent in ways that I have not experienced from other people who lead departments. And so part of me, even though I think what she does is ridiculous and racist, part of me rooted for her in a weird way. Again, maybe it's because I haven't done my first true hit piece against her office that I hold that view. I'm joking. But she was fired rather unceremoniously last week. We actually broke that story on this show and on my Twitter account, and we have since learned why she was fired. And we're presuming it's tied to this investigation that, by the way, cost the state over $62,000, according to the Seattle Times, which is absolutely ludicrous that we would have to spend this much money on her. But apparently she was investigated because of how she was allegedly treating workers. And at times, her conduct included statements against Mexicans. And it's rather ironic that the woman who's in charge of making sure everyone's not racist made racist comments. Now, she denies wrongdoing in some regards. In other regards, she says she wished she would have had time to actually address some of the issues. She says these comments in a way, it's kind of easy to dismiss them as just, well, of course, that's what she's going to say after some embarrassing news comes forward and she wants to continue to get work within the DE&I, the diversity, equity, and inclusion world. And it's not a good look to be accused of being racist. Now, in this case, according to the Times, the investigators found that she micromanaged and made unreasonable requests to employees. She was, quote, disorganized and lacked adequate structure and process. She, quote, made inappropriate or insensitive comments to some staff members, and that she apparently was quick to publicly criticize some of her workers. We knew last week when we got this, or maybe a week and a half ago, that one of the claims coming from the governor's office was that there was high turnover in her department. And that is, in the context here, is five total employees resigned, all for at least in part reasons associated with this, with the complaints in the investigation. Five out of 17. So, I mean, that is a pretty sizable chunk. This is a new office. It was founded in or set up in like 2021. She ended up seeing three resignations in the last year and then two so far this year. And the investigators wrote in their report, each of the individuals who resigned attributed their decision to leave, at least in part, to a chaotic, overburdened, and disrespectful workplace culture created by Dr. Johnson. Now, some of the allegations against her, my bias aside, I don't think are all that significant, and I think is a result of a hypersensitive work culture that in large part the left has created. In this case, it's 100% created by the left because this is under the Inslee administration. They say that one employee was, quote unquote, publicly chastised for attending a meeting that he or she had been invited to at the governor's office without first getting permission from Dr. Johnson or even letting her know. I think that that is 100% appropriate. Now, I suppose it depends on what publicly chastised means, right? If this was, hey, I'm yelling at this worker in front of people and calling them names and being overtly disrespectful, okay, that's obviously not appropriate. But if it's a, hey, you cannot do that, do not do that. Hey, everyone in this room, make sure you understand that if you're going to attend any meetings outside of this office when you're taking away from your work time here, you got to let me know. That's a little bit different. Another person reported being, quote unquote, shamed in a private meeting as well as in public. I don't know what that means. Seriously, I don't know what that means. What does it mean to be shamed in 2023 when everyone seems to be quick to claim that there's some kind of victim. Now, there, I do like this. Two people, quote, were told to wear makeup, specifically lipstick, according to this report. Johnson denies that. I require people to not wear certain things. I don't have a rule that says you have to wear certain things. Otherwise, Max in there wouldn't be without a tie. He would be joining me in wearing a tie every single day if it were up to me. But I do have hard and fast rules saying you are not, under any circumstances, allowed to wear shorts or wear sandals in this office. Not with me. Sorry. We have some level of decorum in this building for me. But specifically lipstick. She told men to wear lipstick, actually. I'm kidding. Johnson also made comments about people's hair. I would be fired in a heartbeat if that were the case, because that's all I do is comment on people's hair, both publicly and privately. Max wasn't here for this, but with Peyton, as those of you who are hardcore fans of the show will remember, I shamed, very strongly shamed Peyton, my former producer, for wearing gel in his hair. That's, whoa, no, 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 no. And once he didn't get a great fade, and I made fun of him for a month, so I'd be fired. Commented on someone's weight and suggested that person, quoted, needed to take care of herself. According to the report, she regularly spoke of one person as a quote-unquote military hire. But what really, I have to assume, did her in, it says in this report, during a group discussion, Dr. Johnson said of a staff member who self-identified as Mexican. By the way, what does that mean, self-identify? Is the person Mexican or not? Self-identify. She apparently said, quote, this may take some time for me because I generally distrust Mexican people. Mexican people have the option of being white when it's convenient for them. Now, in fairness to the person who made this comment, who reported this comment, said to the investigators that the person didn't have any concerns about being treated unfairly by Dr. Johnson. It was just one of the comments that was made around this individual. So it wasn't necessarily directed to this individual. I don't know if that person was, in fact, Mexican who heard this. But obviously, that is a problematic statement. One Hispanic person in the office said in an exit interview that Johnson was, quote, a brilliant, charismatic person, but she still has her flaws. The person said, I understand what this office is about and what it's supposed to be doing, but I feel like at times there is very much an us versus them mentality, meaning people of color versus people who don't look like us. A lot of that rhetoric continues to be stated in meetings, get-togethers, etc. The funny thing is, not only do I 100% believe that statement about the culture at that office, I believe that about the culture in this government completely. And I think it is, in fact, by design. It is about people of color versus people who are not of quote-unquote color, that it's white versus everybody else. I think that is 100% intentional. We've been told over and over and over again that we are existing in institutions of white supremacy, that white people have all of this privilege and everyone else does not. You have government agencies that set up these different affinity groups, like the Black Workers of the Governor's Office group, similarly named office or groups that basically say, yeah, to join us, you have to be Black, or you have to be Latinx, or you have to be LGBT, whatever it happens to be. And I think when you set up those kinds of groups and you encourage those kinds of groups, you are, in fact, pushing an us versus them, white versus everybody else mentality. So that's 100% by design. And I don't know if she should be punished for that in the context that that's probably the expectation. That's what's going on in every single agency, I'm willing to bet, in Washington State. And not just Washington State government, by the way. King County does this a lot. So that's absurd. Now, the Times says some also reported concerns about Johnson's references to God and religion in the workplace. One person reported they were concerned after Johnson asked staff at two welcome breakfasts in 2022 to, quote, join hands and discuss things for which they were thankful, and, quote, ended the discussion with a Christian prayer. Oh, no. Oh, my. So the bigotry is actually coming from folks who don't like religion. I've been in plenty of group settings, not necessarily the workforce, because I do think that we're all taught not to do this, even though I'm not offended by it. But I've been at events in which there are dinners being served, and beforehand they do a prayer and they ask invocation, and they ask everyone to bow their heads in prayer, and there is a prayer that is offered, and everyone at the end says amen. Now, I don't subscribe to that particular Christian belief. Jews don't do that, at least not Reformed Jews don't do this kind of prayer. Certainly, when we pray, it's a different kind of prayer, slightly, obviously, but it is a different kind of prayer. And I've never at any point even felt uncomfortable bowing my head. Jews don't bow their heads in prayer before meals, right? But if others do, I don't see why it offends me. I might be hungry and ready to eat, I guess, but the prayer is usually no more than like 40 seconds. So I'm not entirely sure why anyone would find that offensive other than just not liking religion. They say each investigators interviewed said they were not claiming they had been discriminated against or harassed, but 5 of 11 current or former Equity Office employees raised concerns about Johnson's workplace conduct, articulating what could be violations of policies around equal employment opportunities and prevention of workplace harassment. Now, Johnson responded and said she openly says, hey, look, I had some challenges as director. She said that she had to document poor performances of the staff who, quote, operated like they needed a boss to tell them what to do. And the report says in its summary, externally, Johnson felt unheard, left out of the loop, and set up to fail. She felt like key information was being withheld from her. I weirdly am sympathetic to her position. Obviously, the Mexican comment, the comment about Mexicans is clearly inappropriate. But some of this other stuff kind of seems like she is the victim of being set up to fail. Now, again, I don't know what she's like working for her. I only know what it's like getting emails from her. But this, to me, reads like hypersensitive staffers, the kind you would expect to work for a department of equity or an office of equity, looking for reasons to be offended and then proudly explaining why they're offended. So I'm going to weirdly side with beloved Karen Johnson. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Send me your text, 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show, 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. Let's take a dive into the craziness of the culture wars and the environmentalist wars, where you've got, I think, folks on the left competing to see who's the craziest. We start with the boycott of Target over their clearly inappropriate clothing and messaging towards kids. When you put out tuck-friendly bathing suits for young children, you are very clearly pushing the lie that there's some like 7-year-old who is transgender and is a boy who identifies as a girl. No, this is being put into their heads if they make that claim. I'm not a fan of boycotting for the sake of boycotting. I think we should have a higher bar. I'm deeply uncomfortable, for example, with, and I made this point this morning on the Faulkner Focus. I don't like the idea of calling out Chick-fil-A at this point. And we'll talk about this maybe later on in the show. But when it comes to Target, I do think that the reaction has been the right one, the more noble one, the more just one. And clearly folks on the left don't believe that. They like the idea of pushing gender identity issues on children. They like the idea of what I consider to be confusing these kids, even though I don't think they think that on the left. I think they believe that kids are born transgender and they're using these kids to signal their virtue about how they're evolved on the issue of gender identity. But there was the most ridiculous statement made on MSNBC by an economics professor named Justin Wolfers. He's with the University of Michigan. And the way he called out the strategy of boycotting Target is so over the top that I think it deserves a little bit of a spotlight.
When Target caves into this, then it says that the moment you threaten the employees of even a very large corporation, you get to control its policies. This is economic terrorism, mm-hmm. literally terrorism,
literally.
Creating fear among the workers and forcing the corporations to sell the things you want and not sell the things you don't. So,
okay. Hi, Professor Wolfers. If that's your opinion, great. Awesome. Why don't you ever call out when the left boycotts companies for the same basic reasons, just different ideologies? In fact, let's talk about Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A's CEO donated money to Christian organizations. There was calls for boycotts. They didn't actually work because they make a really good chicken sandwich, and even liberals, including the LGBT community, who was supposed to be upset, like Chick-fil-A. But y'all called for a Chick-fil-A boycott. Is that terrorism? Actually, let's go one step further. You guys are supporters on the left. And I'm not saying Justin Wolfers, but there are the BDS movement, boycott, divest, and sanction. That's coming from the left, exclusively from the left. They're anti-Semites. In fact, BDS movement is an anti-Semitic movement that blames Israel for all the issues in the Middle East. When they defend themselves against incoming rockets from the terrorist organization Hamas, they are accused of overreacting, Israel. So BDS is actually embraced by terrorist organizations, but it is a viewpoint that is held by folks on the left. Is that terrorism or is that justified? Generally, the people who call out the boycotts, in this case, like as it's terrorism, it's only quote unquote terrorism because they disagree with the boycott, the reason for the boycott. But at some point, the left had been doing this for a very long time, and I've taken this position in the past, whereas as uncomfortable as I am with boycotts about content, about political positions, I also understand that there might have to be a scenario in which we set up mutually assured destruction, meaning, yeah, if you want to do this to our companies that are conservative, we're going to do this to your companies that are liberal. And we're going to show that we can do exactly the same that you guys have been doing to try to bully, you know, quote unquote, right-wing companies into dismissing certain values that they hold or trying to bully them into silence. You're going to do that to us? Okay, we're going to do that to you. You're going to boycott the companies that support Fox News or Newsmax or the Wall Street Journal or whatever it is? Okay, great. We're going to do that to you guys. We're going to show you that we can play the exact same game and we can continue to do this, or we can just call a truce and say that these kinds of boycotts are going to be off limits. Now, ultimately, I wish that companies would not get into the culture wars. They decided to do it, and they're worse off because of it. Ask Bud Light, ask Target. Meanwhile, in the crazy world of environmentalists, Jane Fonda, the activist and actress, she was on an interview with, I think it was with actually Kelly Clarkson, but she did this interview talking about climate change. And of course, now it's about racism and sexism and all white people are evil.
There would be no climate crisis if there was no racism. There would be no climate crisis if there was no patriarchy. It's a mindset that sees things in a hierarchical way. You know, white men are the things that really matter, and then everything else with nature at the bottom. When I say that I'm fighting the climate crisis, I also feel that I'm fighting patriarchy and racism.
She goes on to say that white dudes should be jailed. So what's the point of this? I was asked that question, or really I was asked to respond to this on Kennedy yesterday on Fox Business, and I posted the link on my Twitter feed. But what's the point of this? Because it's obviously not to get more people to go into your tent on climate change issues and environmentalism, right? It's not to widen the tent. Comments like this make the tent smaller. And the way to look at comments like this and some of the other nonsense that's put out, like don't eat meat, don't travel, usually coming from people who take private planes and eat plenty of meat. Their comments are not about the environment. It's not about protecting the environment because they don't actually care about the environment. They care about some underlying cause, some underlying ideology. You've got folks like Jane Fonda who believe that institutions in this country and society itself is, steeped in white supremacy and oppression, racism, sexism, homophobia, trans, all the issues that left-wingers like to talk about. Then you've got some folks like the AOCs of the world who take positions on climate change purely to destroy businesses because they're anti-capitalist. They're anti-corporation, but really they want to dismantle capitalism. That's why they hold positions like this. There's a lot of room for agreement, generally speaking, when it comes to the environment. There's a lot of room for compromise and forwarding smart policy that doesn't hurt the economy while also helping the environment. I am an environmentalist in a traditional sense, not the way that left-wingers will define it, but I am an advisor to the American Conservation Coalition. This is a conservative environmentalist group. We embrace things like, nuclear, which can help save this environment. It's incredibly clean, incredibly efficient. I embrace giving corporations tax credits to invest in technology to create cleaner energy, etc. So it is just foolish, I think, when we hear comments like that from Jane Fonda and others and think that it's about the environment. No, it's not. So let's start ignoring those lunatics and instead focusing on serious people who care about the environment. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show.